new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And Matt, I decided we almost need a new segment. And I told you this in text earlier, called Ask Clown of the Week.
Yeah, for
real. It's funny because the next movie that we're doing next week, this dude actually plays a clown, a weird clown. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
But John Leguizamo is mad that that the new Super Mario Bros. Animated movie is a doesn't have representation in it, and no Latino characters, and he's boycotting it, and you know that the original Mario Brothers movie had representation, and it's like, dude, first off, no one fucking cares. Okay, second, it's like, do you realize that the original Mario Brothers movie is considered one of the worst films ever made?
Yeah,
no one saw it, and three, you know, I hate to tell you, buddy, but Luigi and Mario were supposed to be Italian plumbers, and you and Bob Hoskins aren't even Italian. It's like
exactly.
It just seems like every week now you have some celebrity that feels the need to voice their opinion on something that most of us don't really give a shit about because we just don't. You know,
they're voicing animated characters.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the Mario Brothers movie is going to miss your $7 to $10 for your movie ticket, John Leguizamo. You know, it's like, I think from what I'm reading so far, the movie's doing very well. Looks like it could be upwards of could make $150 million for its 5-day opening, which is huge.
Oh yeah,
I mean this is a film that has a
it opened Wednesday.
Yeah, it opened Wednesday, and this is we're recording on Thursday night, the day after it opened. It did like $31 million its first day. I mean, that's
I gave enormous. More money to it.
That's enormous for a Wednesday movie during a school week. But I guess there's a lot of West Coast schools are out this week. They have spring break first week of April instead of in March like we do.
Interesting.
So I guess that's why it's doing well. But you're talking a movie that has, 1982, 83 when the Mario Brothers came around. So you're almost 40 years of history and two or three generations have played these games, and I'm seeing it Saturday morning. I have my tickets already, taking the kids. So I'm looking forward to it.
The audience score is accurate. It's doing great. Tons of Easter eggs, tons of callbacks. So it's real fun. And it's great for kids. Some people are being critical of it. But it's like, remember, it's a kid's movie, you know, very, very much a kid's movie.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, Minions: The Rise of Gru last summer wasn't well reviewed, but you know what? I had fun with it. I enjoyed it with the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, the critics, you know, sometimes they get it right. They truly review movies the right way. You know, and then sometimes they just wonder, like, did they even really watch the movie? You know,
We didn't watch the same movie.
Like, I really feel like Shazam suffered from superhero fatigue and most critics just wrote it off, but I thought it was fine. You know, it was a good movie. And I feel the same way. I think critics are just being too harsh on Mario because it's a kid movie and they're not really paying attention to what it is. You know, whatever. But that being said, you know, I John Leguizamo, go suck a dick, you know, or something.
Yeah,
get your life happy. It's like,
dude, obviously your life is probably missing something if you're out there trashing kids movies
and like, dude, and who is he? I mean, don't get me wrong, when he's on film he's fine. He was in the Wick films, a couple of them, and you know, he's done some good roles over the years, but he's not even would you even consider Leguizamo A-list? No,
I
wouldn't. I think he's more actor. He's a B-list character actor that shows up in films. You're like, oh, there's that guy I recognize, you know. I think the best role he had that I remember, it was in Romeo and Juliet when he played aside Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, he played Capulet. He was great in that, you know. I actually really like that movie. That's a movie we should cover one day. But you know, he's a B-list guy who appears in stuff and he tries to make these A-list comments, and it's just like, dude, you're our ass clown of the week. I'm serious. This might become a thing, man. It seems like every week lately, there's one, you know. We just have to pick and choose each week an ass clown.
There we go. Ass clown.
But other than that, man, you know, how was your week, man? Good. Mine was okay. It's pretty standard, really.
Yeah, standard week. You know, we're getting, you know, Easter candy together because, you know, it's Easter week. Kids
Yeah, I gotta fill a bunch of eggs tomorrow.
Yeah,
and then I gotta boil some eggs too to dye. And the daughter wants to dye some, so I said, okay, we'll dye some. I bought some dye.
There you go.
Got to do that.
Yeah, that point. Way they get their decoration on.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, Easter's cool. You know, I'm not a overly religious guy as I've gotten older. You know, but I understand what it stands for, and it's cool for the kids. They have fun hunting eggs and stuff like that. So. It should be good, you know, and yay, some family time, you know. How
that goes. There you go. Yeah, family time's a good time.
Yeah, so it should be cool. But, you know, I don't have like a cool job where I get Friday and Monday off or anything. I still have to work tomorrow and work Monday, but.
Yeah, same here.
It is what it is, you know, but it'll be cool. See Mario and spend some time with the fam, so it'll be a good weekend. But before we get to that, well, let's do this podcast thing. I guess it's time to start. We're still a bit a week away from it, but, even though we haven't officially been accepted, I know we would be accepted, and we'll be back at Comic Palooza this year, Memorial Day weekend.
There we go.
A show / panel for you people. More details on that later, but, just a little shout out to Comic Palooza, coming up at the end of May. Be like, man, shit, 6 or 7 straight year we've been there. It's been a lot.
Yeah, they just announced Shatner. Shatner's going to be there, man.
I saw that. I'm wondering if he's going to do his weird Priceline commercial bit. I don't know where that came from. But Shatner, man, he's like 90-something now, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. And thinking of I was reading before we got on. I didn't put this in the news, but Bill Butler, not necessarily a name in Hollywood that someone might know, but this guy was 101 and he passed away today. But you'll know his work. This dude was a cinematographer behind Jaws, first four Rocky, well, at least Rocky 2, 3, and 4. I can't remember if he did the first one. Numerous films. This guy's, you've seen a movie with his work in it. And 101, man, he would have been 102 in 2 days.
Wow.
Incredible. And I saw that he passed away today. But, I mean, he gave us Jaws, and we all know Jaws is one of the most tremendous films ever made. And he was a cinematographer behind Steven Spielberg's.
Blockbuster.
Yeah, he was a cinematographer behind Steven Spielberg's cameras for the classic that is Jaws. So major props to Bill Butler, a life definitely lived, that's for sure. Let's get into what we watched this week, man. So you went and saw Mario Brothers. Give us a little spoiler for your review. I'm going to see it Saturday, so don't fucking ruin it for me.
Yeah. No, they do a really good job of introducing the universe. There's a ton of Easter eggs in there, callbacks to maybe other Mario stuff that you've seen or haven't seen, depending on your age. It's really fun, really cool. I think it's definitely worth the audience score. The audience score is very much a better depiction than what the critics are giving it. I think critics are giving it like somewhere in the high 50s, and the audience score says 98%, and the audience got it right. It's like anytime you see that vast of a difference, you go with the higher number, especially if it's the audience score. Right. Because, you know,
like Black Summer last fall. I mean, Black Adam. Most fans liked it and the critics didn't. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, maybe I think the critics are just overly critical of The Rock in that movie. Because he was being The Rock, you know, he was doing that smoldering intensity stare that he's got, you know, you know. Like you said, critics get it wrong sometimes. This time they did. I don't want to say too much more, but it's worth seeing. It's a lot of fun. I took all the kids. It was my youngest's first movie. Everyone saw it. And,
wait, you took Samuel?
Sammy. Oh, yeah. He was about as good as, you know, a almost 3-year-old can be.
I think all mine were about three for their first movie. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, man, this has got to be his first movie. I was like, especially I was like, let's all get out of the house. I had a $50 gift card for Cinemark. So we used it. We definitely used it and then some. They all had fun. And there's two end credits. So just make sure you stay. There's one right after the movie. Jack Black is great. I think I would say he kind of steals the show a little bit. But he's that kind of guy. You know, Jack Black's that kind of guy that's going to step in. He's a big presence. He's definitely noticed in every single movie he does. And this movie doesn't negate that. So check it out. Just make sure you stay for both credits because yeah. I feel like the second one is more meaningful, and hints to a possible sequel.
Yeah. Cool, man. I'm looking forward to it.
I also checked out 2023's Knock at the Cabin because it came on Peacock. Yeah. So Peacock, you can watch Knock at the Cabin. It's M. Night Shyamalan's latest film. It's got Batista in it, and it's got Ron from the Harry Potter movie, some unknown actors. They might be known. I haven't looked at their IMDb, but I didn't recognize them. About how this family of three has to choose which one of them dies so that they can prevent the apocalypse. And basically, this group of four, including Batista, come into their cabin in the woods that they're renting out to tell them this and basically force them to choose. And it's creepy. I don't think it's Shyamalan's best work. I think The Sixth Sense
is long past his best work. Yeah.
Sixth Sense is the best thing he ever did. I think so. Some people like The Village. I think some people like The Village, huh?
I don't like The Village.
No. I think it's Sixth Sense. I really like Willis in there. I like the kid. I always forget the kid's name. Child actor. Now he's of course grown up and he was in The Boys.
I don't know, I kind of prefer Unbreakable a little bit.
Oh, I forgot he did Unbreakable.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen it.
I haven't seen Unbreakable.
So I'll have to watch that in Glass. Slacker. And yeah.
I never saw Glass, but I saw Unbreakable. It's cool. Slacker.
But yeah, that, and of course, I know, you know, we both watched Mando.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch any movies this week, but I did start watching on Paramount Plus the new episodes of Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, and, wow.
They're pretty funny. I saw that it got renewed for a second season, so I'm like, you know, I'm going to start watching this. And it's funny because I still watch MTV, but it's like reality show stuff now. There's no videos.
Yeah.
And there is some videos, but it's very little. It's pretty funny, man. Mike Judge has not missed a beat with these characters. You know, 30 years later, he's still making some really funny stuff. I've enjoyed reliving some of my high school years watching these new episodes of Beavis and Butthead. And if you have Paramount Plus, you know, you enjoyed Beavis and Butthead the first go around, why not, man? It's okay to like dick and fart humor.
Yeah, I like that kind of humor. You don't have to think much.
I mean, the movie that came out last year was hilarious, and the new show is really good too. I'm enjoying the heck out of it, and some really just funny stuff, really laugh out loud moments. I've had some fun with it. And other than that, I don't miss much when it comes to Star Wars, but I had a hard time getting into the Bad Batch, but I'm giving it another chance. I'm starting it back up. I'm only about three or four episodes in the first season, but I think it flows better now that all the episodes are out. I think that was my problem with it. It was just like one at a time. I think I'm going to enjoy it more streaming it like this, you know? So I'm going to watch that, but yes, I did watch the new Mandalorian episode and, lots of celebrity cameos that almost take you out of the episode a little bit. It's weird seeing Jack Black in the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
That one bothered me more than Christopher Lloyd, because Christopher Lloyd is such a good character actor that, you know, you can kind of drop him in any interview in any universe and he's going to do his job. You know, I mean,
oh yeah,
he was in Star Trek, you know, and he was of course John Big Booty in Buckaroo Banzai. And,
yes.
And of course, most known for playing Doc Brown in the Back to the Future films. And Christopher Lloyd's just, I mean, the dude was in the damn Piranha 3D movie that was terrible. And
oh yeah,
you know, so he'll do anything, man. And you know, from science fiction to classics to the TNA movies.
Flew over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. And so Christopher Lloyd was, it was cool to see him in the Star Wars universe. And so it's another, Bo-Katan leaves to continue to begin her quest with Din Djarin to find the Mandalorians that used to work with her or be under her rule. Mm-hmm. And so they come across this planet that I feel like the planet was a, speaking of Star Trek, I feel like the planet was a little Star Trek-y. You know, it's like it, usually Star Wars is kind of grungy and, you know, dirty and war torn, and this planet's real clean and it's like in a it's in a dome and there all the droids are running everything because the people don't work because they're used to having droids or everything for them in society.
I thought that was funny whenever he's like, if the droids stop working, what will the people do? Society will collapse because they've never worked a day in their life. And I'm like, this is hilarious.
Yeah, but the droids are malfunctioning. So, and Bo, before they will allow Bo and Din to speak to the Mandalore sect, they have to solve their malfunctioning droid problem for them. And through a series of adventures, they discover that Christopher Lloyd's character is basically doing something to their programming to cause a malfunction on purpose.
They go to a droid bar. All these droids go to a droid bar where they get this liquid that kind of helps resynthesize their circuits. It helps with repairs, lubricate, and everything. But I guess he, like, on certain batches, he's like injecting like some nanotechnology, which has like a code in there that will, you know, force these droids to, like, you know, rise up under the push of a button, kind of like an Order 66 thing, but for droids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to explain it.
Yeah. It was kind of an awkward plot side quest. But ultimately it leads to, at the end, Bo and Din do solve the droid problem. And then they meet up with the Mandalorians and they say they're not going to follow her, but then Bo challenges their leader and defeats him in combat. And, so they're like, okay, well, I guess we're following you now because this is the way, so to speak. And then Din, but they still don't want to quite follow her because she doesn't have the darksaber.
Yeah.
So Din basically hands over the darksaber to her in a sense of a kind of a loophole, so to speak.
Yeah.
It allows him to give her the darksaber without her fighting him. And she ignites it, and that's basically how the episode ends. Looks like she's going to be the leader of the section of Mandalorians again, and they're going to follow her back to Navarro, apparently, I guess, is the plan to reunite the Mandalorians.
Go back to
Navarro. So we'll see if that plays out, how it all may play out. But I have a feeling I just keep – like, this season's been a little uneven, so I keep feeling like, what's the big plot here? So I have a feeling something's going to happen. And
yeah, something's going to pop out. It's a Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're just winding up. We're winding up. Okay. And then we're just going to get, boom, it's going to pop out at us last episode.
I mean, Filoni and Favreau have always delivered, and I expect them to deliver before the season ends. I haven't disliked this season, but I do feel it's a little uneven compared to the first two. But it's still some great Star Wars action. I did like the fight between Bo and the other guy at the end. People keep trying to say that, oh, it's not Din's show anymore, it's Bo's show. I haven't really felt that. I feel it's just like kind of a buddy show. Yeah, they have given Bo a little bit more of a spotlight last couple of episodes, but I still don't feel that she's taking the show over or anything. I'm not sure. I think that's some fandom and fan site writers and things trying to, you know, stir up some, you know, some business, you know, because I don't feel that way watching the show. But Lizzo was also a cameo in there. And what is she known for? Is she a singer or something? I don't know.
She's a singer. She also went to U of H and played in the Spirit of Houston marching band. She played the flute. Yeah. And so she's a big U of H fan.
So some cameos in this episode that were a bit different. It was cool seeing Jack Black. It was just also kind of weird. It's like, hey, it's Jack Black in Star Wars universe. And one thing, though, you could tell that Jack, his acting performance in it, which is fine, but you can tell he's enjoying the hell out of it. And that's great. You know, I would be too, man. I'm like, I'm in fucking Star Wars, yo.
Yeah, dude, you're in a Star Wars, you know, show.
He might have been a little stoned throughout making most of the episode and just enjoying the shit out of himself, but that's all right.
Probably.
You know? But, you know, it was solid. You know, maybe not the best episode of Mandalorian ever, but enjoyable.
Enjoyable. You know? Definitely enjoyable.
Yeah. So we'll see where it goes with these final two episodes. And, man, I'm just sitting here. We're recording. It's massively fucking raining outside.
Oh, yeah. It's coming down.
So if you hear some thunder in the background, we apologize.
Yeah.
Because it is really coming down right now. So, yeah, man. So The Mandalorian, two episodes left. We'll see what happens. Let's do some news before we get today's featured film. Several trailers that came out. Mostly trailers in the news this week. We got our first look at the new series starring Nick Fury, Secret Invasion. Well, not our first look, because there was a trailer already, but this is the official trailer.
Yes.
As it's going to launch June 21st. And, you know, most of the Marvel TV shows have been kind of, you know, hated them, but this one looks pretty fucking good. I'm not going to lie. I was pretty impressed with that trailer. I was like, wow, this actually looks like it's here's a good way to put it, Matt. Since Endgame, well, maybe not even Endgame, since No Way Home, we haven't had that old school first wave Marvel feel. You know, some of the new movies have been kind of not quite what we expected. Secret Invasion feels like it fits in phase one. You know, it feels like the Marvel we started watching 12 years ago, 13 years ago when they started all this stuff. Fury, and that's the vibe I
stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I got from the trailer. And I don't know if you got the same vibe. And it looks really cool. And one thing I know, Samuel L. Jackson's not going to put himself in something that's terrible. Especially when it comes to Marvel. Down. Yeah. So I think it's going to be good. You know, and I think it's going to be important because we know one of the movies is called, what's the second Avengers movie?
Secret Wars.
Secret Wars. Is it called Secret? I know they have the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. So we know, we all know in the comics, the Skrulls take over things and start invading. So this, I think, is going to play an important part in the future of this phase and what's going on in the multiverse saga. So I think it should be cool. But that's going to hit Disney Plus on June 21st. We're going to stay with, well, we know we're going to save the other Marvel trailer for third, but we're going to talk, man, we got a trailer for DC's Blue Beetle, which James Gunn is kind of playing up, and a lot of rumor that it's the unofficial first film in James Gunn's DC universe, even though their Superman Legacy is. I don't know. I felt the trailer was pretty generic. superhero fare, like, oh, here's an origin story. Here's a bad guy. Learn how to be a hero, defeat the bad guy.
And they are hating on Batman in the
trailer. Yeah, they hate on Batman.
Batman's a fascist. And I'm like, what?
I wasn't impressed. You know, originally the film was going to be on HBO Max, and it feels like maybe it should have stayed on HBO Max, but now it's getting a theatrical release. It was okay.
I also agree. It's okay.
Now,
the suit looks better than the one from Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Now, the truly impressive trailer we got this week was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Even though they took off the part one from it, still part one, we know the sequel's coming out. And this trailer was pretty awesome. I love the first one. You know, one of my favorite Spider-Man movies, comic movies of the last several years. So really looking forward to seeing Across the Spider-Verse. They do the meme thing in it, which is cool. Spider-Man's pointing at each other.
Oh, man.
Introduction of Spider-Man 2099, voiced by Oscar Isaac. You know, it just looks like it's going to continue Miles' story and his adventures after becoming Spider-Man. Definitely looking forward to this one quite a bit. June is going to be one hell of a loaded month. I mean, you've got Spider-Man, Transformers, The Flash, and Indiana Jones. I mean, it's going to be a heck of a month. You know,
be at the movies every damn week.
Pretty much. You know, I'm looking forward to it, though. It looks cool. Mm-hmm. And so that's any thoughts you had on the Spider-Man trailer?
No, it looks great. I mean, there's nothing else to say. It looks great. It looks like it could be better than the first one.
It could be, which is a lot to top, but it could be.
Yeah.
The last bit of news I had, you know, Disney continues to be doing these live action remakes. You know, they're doing Little Mermaid's coming out soon. They're doing a Lilo and Stitch live action remake. And this one kind of came unexpected because they haven't seemed to be remaking their newer films. Most of the remakes have been their classics from the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Mm-hmm. But The Rock, kind of announced that they're doing a live action Moana remake. And he's on as producer and possibly is going to star in as Maui. Why? I guess that's my first thought. You know, because I don't know, man. I don't feel we need a live action Moana.
I don't think we need it. But Moana is probably the best Disney movie that's come out in the past 10 years. And, you know, I think that's fairly, that's fair to say. And I think it's probably, if I were a betting man, it's probably the most streamed Disney movie as of late, on Disney Plus, as far as like animated. Because I know that because my kids want to watch it like every other day. And I'm pretty sure most households are similar, because it's almost, it's damn near perfect. It's damn near perfect animated film for what it's set out to do. And there's money to be made. And, you know, Mark, you've said it plenty of times. If there's money involved and it's going to make money, they're going to do it, whether that's true. Necessary or not.
I mean, I do enjoy Moana quite a bit too, but I don't know, man. It's such a beautifully animated film. I just feel like it's very difficult to capture that magic in live action, you know? So, you know, that's my thoughts on it, but we'll see. You know? But like you said, it's all about making money.
In the end, that's what it's all about, baby.
All right, well, I guess it's time to get in today's feature film as we officially kick off our April theme month with comic movies that just don't quite work. But strangely, this movie works more than the other three that we're probably going to cover this month, I think, as at least a director's cut does. And we're talking the 2003 Ben Affleck starring Daredevil on today's show. Now, this movie came out in theaters and we viewed the director's cut, which came out, about 3 or 4 years later, they released director's cut, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And,
3 or 4 years later.
So we are covering the director's cut, which is about, it's about 25 minutes longer, but it's also re-edited in parts and little short new scenes added here, there, new dialogue, much better version, theatrical version. And essentially, you know, this is the, we're going to talk the good first in this movie, then we'll talk the bad. I think it's a good way to separate how to do these not so good comic book movies.
Yeah.
As a longtime Daredevil fan, the good in this movie is some of the imagery was taken right from the comic books, especially Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil storyline, some of Frank Miller's books with his famous books. I think the costume actually is pretty good for an updated version. Yeah. I think most of the acting in this movie is pretty solid all around. I think all the actors are trying their best for this movie. Favreau brings a little bit of comedic to this with his version of Foggy Nelson. Mm-hmm. The set design is feels very Gothic noir inspired, trying to make Hell's Kitchen look very Gothic in that way.
Does a good job of that. And yeah, the religious part of it, you know, Matt Murdock's background,
which is always important to his character. I think the film is shot pretty well overall. I do think that the story is, especially in the director's cut, it's definitely easier to follow, and it does tell a full story. But it also, that's where some of the problems lie in it too, which we'll get into in a minute. Is there any good that I'm leaving off that you're thinking of?
Stan Lee. Got to see Stan Lee again. I think that was, it's always fun. Just, you know, remembering that he would always pop up in these Marvel movies. And, you know, this one's no exception. He shows up, a young Matt Murdock post-accident, stops him from crossing the street.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. You know, a lot has been made about Affleck on this. And one thing I hate about, like, some of these movies is, like, and when we do Green Lantern in a couple weeks, Ryan Reynolds does the same thing, is that these actors choose to do these movies, and later on they want to badmouth themselves about it. And Affleck has done that. He goes, oh, I didn't know what I was doing back then playing Daredevil. But honestly, Ben's fine in the movie. I don't really have any problems with the way he plays a role. I think he does a good job. In fact, I think Jennifer Garner is not as good in the movie. She feels like she's doing this to get paid. I feel like she's just kind of almost laughing her way through it. Not laughing literally, but like on the inside, like, really, what am I doing? I'm doing a comic movie. It just feels like she's not taking it seriously.
Maybe yeah, she took some of that 13 going on 30-ness goofiness with her.
Yeah, I also, I don't buy her badassness as Elektra, mostly because they changed a lot of her story. If you've ever watched the Netflix Daredevil, we know in or read the comics, you know that Elektra was learned to fight by the hand, and she was raised basically in a family of ninjas, and so much more backstory to her.
They tried to retcon it 2 years later with the same director, and he got this one wrong. And then they give him another film, Ghost Rider, and you know, we see a pattern there. He got it wrong again. Three strikes, you're out, buddy. He didn't see another comic book movie after that. He was 0-3, Daredevil, Elektra, and Ghost Rider.
Well, what's strange though is Daredevil made money.
It did.
It made its budget back and then some. It wasn't
plus $100 million.
Yeah, it wasn't unsuccessful because you got to think in 2003 at the time we didn't have the MCU. Batman Begins wasn't out. This was a different era for comic book movies. We did not because I mean you could argue Batman Begins started the new era of comic book movies. You could argue that then the MCU came around. So for at this time, this is the kind of comic movies we had. So this movie wasn't unsuccessful. I think the biggest problem with it is if you don't watch the director's cut, and the theatrical version is where a lot of the problems lie because it's quick. It's only an hour and 40 minutes. It crams all this stuff into that. So the 2 hour and 10 minute version really stretches things out more, explains things more. I also like in the director's cut, one of the good things is the buildup in this movie. You know, Daredevil, you see a little bit of action from him at the beginning, but you really don't see him do anything again almost an hour into the movie. Well, and
that's sometimes in medias res does not translate well into movies. So, you know, of course, you know, that's the literary technique where we start in like the height of the climax, you get a snippet of it, and then we revert back to the beginning.
Right.
I think, you know, imagine you're watching Spider-Man 2001 and you see Green Goblin holding, you know, Mary Jane over the ledge. And, you know, Spider-Man's like, oh, you know, what am I going to do? And then it reverts back to the beginning on the field trip. I just don't think it works in comic book movies. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that's something that really didn't work. And I wish we would have just started at the beginning. And maybe shorten the beginning a little bit. You know, I don't think we needed to see a young, you know, Daredevil, Matt Murdock, whipping his bully with a cane.
Right.
You know, like, I'm like, okay, when's it going to stop? He's like, just whipping back and forth with his cane. And then he like freaking cartwheel kicks him. And I'm like, just start with that. Knock him out first. Don't like, you know, whack him back and forth like you've got like a switch. And then, so you got this one-dimensional bully. That's another just, you know, bad part of the script.
Yeah, I do feel like you're right. It's necessary to tell his origin, how he got blinded. But at the same time, you could have told the story in this movie without his origin. You know, it could have been done through exposition. Hey, I had an accident as a kid. And, you know,
the way the new Daredevil does it, they flash back as the story's being told.
Right.
With corresponding scenes that tie back to that memory. And I feel like if you did that with this movie, you'd have a much better, you know, theatrical performance. Yeah. You know.
No, that's fair enough to say. But the one thing, though, the directors I was talking is the buildup in this film. You know, we don't get a lot of Daredevil action until almost an hour into the film. And then we're introduced to Bullseye, which adds a new medium to the film. And we get the Kingpin is kind of a background player throughout most of this film until at the end, he's revealed that Wilson Fisk is the Kingpin and Daredevil has to confront him. And I kind of like the way that plays out, this whole buildup to it. So some of those parts are well done. Michael Clarke Duncan is fantastic as Wilson. He really, you can tell Michael Clarke Duncan usually plays good guys. It kind of enjoys being a villain in this, you know, he's kind of having fun with it. Rest in peace, man. He was so good on screen, such a presence. And Colin Farrell's definitely having a lot of fun as Bullseye. He gets to use his real voice in this, his Irish accent, and he's just having a good time with it. And but he's menacing. He's downright scary.
He's and, over the top.
Over the top. But he's not so over the top that it's like it takes you out of the movie.
He's riding, I think, he's riding a motorcycle with his feet. Yes. And he's got like fucking 10 shurikens that he's throwing.
Right.
And I thought that was funny.
Yeah, and there is kind of a there's some the subplot with Coolio is a little bit out of left field, but I guess it's trying to show Matt Murdock the lawyer and
the bad lawyer.
The
he's
bad
losing yeah. cases, and then he's like, "Well, I guess I got to kill this guy."
Right.
And then defeat him as Matt Murdock, so I'm going to defeat him as Daredevil.
And then it's also a kind of a subplot with Wilson Fisk and Elektra's dad. And for some reason, Wilson wants Elektra's dad dead.
Yeah, because he wants out.
Yeah,
because like, no one gets out.
Oh. Yeah, so it's just sort of thrown in there. So I think that's where the problems start to lie with this movie, is that they take about 100 issues of comics and they try to cram it into 2 hours, which causes a lot of issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's better just to, less is more sometimes. I think you could, Batman did it right. They told an origin story, know, concisely, and but yet well enough to where you're able to grasp it. And
what is that?
Maybe a little less time on that. It would have been a little bit better. I don't know.
Right. Well, and that's where I think the Elektra storyline in the comics as was told pretty well in the Netflix series is a really important long storyline that Frank Miller, drew out over several issues and it had a background to it, and Matt and Elektra falling in love. And when Elektra dies, it's heartbreaking to Matt and it's heartbreaking to the reader. And so in the movie, they throw in there, but it's so rushed. So when Bullseye kills her, you really don't have much feeling towards it. You're just like, oh, okay. Where even in the Netflix show, you felt a little bit more, even though they did a little different. And if I'm making this Daredevil film, I would have maybe left all that out of the movie. I would maybe not even done the Elektra storyline. Just left it out. Made this movie focus on Matt trying to become a lawyer and go after Wilson Fisk.
Yeah. And it's like some of the other stuff. It's like the powers that they try and give him. It's like, did we really have to add creepy smelling and the ability to detect a fine woman from two blocks away? He's like,
well, and some of that I think is too, is I will almost blame that on 2003 comic storytelling. They felt that audiences needed a visual aspect to help them learn what's going on. Well, how does Daredevil see and hear or feel vibrations? Where now they don't treat the audience as stupid. They realize now that, hey, audiences are in tune with what's going on. They understand that Daredevil has heightened senses. I think that's fair to say. It's a different time 20 years ago making this type of movie than if you make it now.
Fair enough. That's a good point. And I think you have more true believers today. I think more people today took that from, Stan Lee and, took his advice and became true believers. And they don't require that long, elaborate backstory so much.
Right. Well, and then these producers and directors also realize, like, hey, our fans are reading these comics. They know these stories. They don't need to be told how it works. And I think there was a time where producers and directors did not understand that. They didn't realize, they took for granted how popular the comic medium was. They didn't realize that you had generations that had been reading these books. I mean, the Frank Miller's Daredevil stories were told in the 80s.
Yeah.
So these grown-ups who are going to these movies have read these stories, And I think they didn't understand that, like, hey, we don't need to dumb down. We don't need to dumb this down for the audiences anymore. But they did back then, where everything had to be explained to you, had to be given to you in a visual medium. I thought the him sleeping the Epsom salt was a little weird because I don't remember that ever in any Daredevil comics. Maybe it was there and I don't remember it. But I guess they were given, again, it's a visual representation to explain to the audience how he can sleep at night without his senses being heightened. But it's a little strange,
Yeah. It looks like friggin' Dracula getting out.
Yeah.
And then what's funny is, like, I feel like this movie is like Batfleck Begins, you know, he's in that bar and he's crouched up on the top, like he is Batman. And they're like, what are you here for? And it's like, justice, everything's justice. I think 9 times out of 10, you ask a superhero, a dark brooding superhero, you know, what they're here for. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be justice or some other synonym of that term, like vengeance.
And that reminds me, I don't really care for the narration in this. Like, it's okay. But like when Robert Pattinson's narrating in the Batman, I felt like he was narrating a comic book. Yes. When Affleck's narrating in this, it felt again like a dumbing down of the audience. Let's explain things to the audience that they need to know. Yeah. It didn't feel like internal monologue, you know? And so I didn't care for that too much. But you know, this movie it's not terrible. I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it's not great. It's kind of an in-between combat movie. It's got enjoyable moments, got good visuals. I think the biggest problem is it tries to cram a lot in a 2-hour film.
Yeah.
And I think that's where its biggest issue lies. Less could have been more. Not try to do so much in the 2 hours, especially such classic stories that need to be told over a couple of films instead of just one.
I think there's only one kind of director that can pull off this kind of storyline, like this kind of script, and that's Sam Raimi. Because I feel like the Spider-Man films, you know, as far as like the script, maybe it's, you know, it's not super, not like, you know, miles ahead of this one.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like Sam Raimi made up for it. And I think with the right director, you could have had maybe not like a great film, but, you know, a more respectful one, you know, as critical rating.
And Mark Steven Johnson, who directed this, I've read some stuff where he talked about that. He goes, hey, it was a learning experience. He goes, I this is a big film for me. I tried to do the best I could.
Yeah, and he wrote Grumpy Old Man and Grumpier Old Man.
And And he was glad he got to do his director's cut, because he says the theatrical cut wasn't what he intended, but that's what the studio wanted. They weren't sure people would sit through a 2-hour movie. So that, you know, and but he was able to get his final vision, and he understands that wasn't maybe the movie that it could have been. But I think it turned out to be a fairly decent movie in the end, is fair enough to say. Like I said, it just suffers from too much in one movie, but I think that I enjoy it, man, for some reason. I don't hate this movie. Yeah. As a Daredevil fan, there's a lot I like about it.
It's a mistake that people are still making today, making films. They're still trying to cram too much into one or into a shortened time frame. You know, back then, you know, 3-hour runtime would have been better for the movie. But I think, if you aren't Lord of the Rings, you ain't running a 3-hour runtime. Now a 3-hour runtime is normal, you know, take, you see a movie that's only 2 hours. You're like, oh, it's only 2 hours. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And, and we still get some cheesy comic movies like this. Like Venom's not a great comic movie, but it made a lot of money at the box office.
Yeah.
And it had its moments that were fun, you know? And that's how I feel about Daredevil. I think Daredevil's I think it's better than the Fantastic Four films that came out back then.
For sure.
You know, is it better than like what people consider the bad Spider-Man, Spider-Man 3? I don't know if it's better than even Spider-Man 3, but I might enjoy it a little bit more than Spider-Man 3, if that makes sense. And maybe some of that's from being a Daredevil fan. I do like the final shot in this movie. That's right off the Guardian Devil comic book cover where Daredevil's falling off the roof. I forgot to talk about that, or flying down from the roof.
And
he shoots his thing. I think that's really cool. It did skip most of the major Daredevil characters in there, except it is missing Stick. He's not in the film.
Stick.
Wish he would
be. He is
in
the Elektra film, though.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
You know, which was McDowell, played
I think, is,
awesome by Scott Glenn in the television series.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
So, you know, but overall, man, not a terrible comic book film. Daredevil, it doesn't quite work in a lot of ways, and that's why we picked it for this month's theme to kick things off. But arguably, it works better than the next three that we're going to talk about, I would think.
And it's also, I guess, you're a big music guy, Mark. It's also got some bad new metal in there. It's got Puddle of Mud, you know?
Yeah.
They put Nickelback on there, you know?
Oh, God.
It's definitely.
I mean, you can argue that Evanescence became popular because of this movie, with them having a song in the soundtrack.
You can, yeah.
Oh, and then, I think. What about this part? Okay. Elektra, when she has her training montage, why is she cutting sandbags all over the really nice living room? I'm like, don't you have a dojo or do this outside? You're just rich. You're like, oh, my maid's going to fucking clean it up. That scene bothers my anxiety. I'm like, why is she cutting sandbags all over the living room? It's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's a small quip, but I'm just like, stop doing that.
Yeah, whenever your kids dropped a bunch of sand in your own living room or something.
Yes, or there's a couple moments like that when they have their little flirt fight in the park and the kids are cheering them on. Why would the kids cheer them on? Why?
It makes no sense. Stalk you, and then it's gonna pan out.
It's like the kids would be like
an arcade game.
I know, right? The kids would run away and be like, "Why are these adults fighting?" I know. Yeah. So that part was kind of like, what? But anyway, Daredevil, man, it's pretty okay. You know, it's not the worst thing. Affleck, yeah, I know he got a chance later to play Batman, but I think he should still be proud of this movie. It's not a terrible movie. You know, it's on his resume.
It's on his resume. Yep. And Justice is won.
He's made worse. He made Reindeer Games.
That's true. He did make Jersey Girl too.
Hey, I like Jersey Girl.
You like Jersey Girl?
Yeah, I don't think it's bad. I've come around to it, you know.
Guess it's
over
okay.
the years. It's not terrible. I mean, it's not Kevin Smith's best film, but
it's better than Gigli or Gigli.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, did Daredevil start the Jennifer Garner Ben Affleck thing? Was this their first? It might have been. I don't know.
It had to have been. Because I don't think Bennifer.
I don't know if this started Bennifer or not. So did he had a couple Bennifers. He had her and then he had Bennifer Lopez, didn't he?
Yeah. Bennifer Lopez, dude.
I guess Ben likes chicks named Jennifer. Well, good for him.
He does. He's back with Lopez.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So this is kind of ironic that our movie that we're doing next week to continue comic movies that don't quite work stars our ass clown of the week in the movie.
Yes.
And of John Leguizamo. And we're going to go back and we're going to talk the live action version of Spawn.
It's time. Imagine a substance with the power to destroy humanity. Imagine a creature insane enough to use it. Imagine a hero on the verge of creation. From flesh to steel.
You must visualize your objective.
From blood to blade.
Don't get cocky. You have a lot more to learn.
From man to spawn.
Peek-a-boo. I see you.
Harvested the ultimate weapon. Makes the Ebola virus look like a skin rash.
Congratulations. I say destroy the cosmos. Ask questions later.
Who are you?
This is just what they want. You're playing their game.
Then I'll play dirty.
You've been violated, girly man.
Use your armor.
Now stay sharp. The night is young.
This summer, evil has a new enemy. Justice has a new weapon. And the world has a new hero. Spawn.
Man, this is a movie that when it came out, I was very excited about because I was a big Spawn fan of the comics. And I saw it in theaters and I'm going to admit that I actually saw this twice in theaters, as bad as it was. But
wow,
at the time it came out, I didn't really realize it was bad, you know, like, cause it was cool, you know, and it's been a long time since I watched it. So I'm curious how it's going to hold up. And from what I've done on my early research is that the movie itself isn't the worst thing, but the special effects are pretty bad now when you watch them. So that's kind of what I've read from some things. Of course, stars Michael J. White as Al Simmons Spawn, and John Leguizamo plays the Violator. So we will go back next week and revisit Spawn, which you can watch along with us on HBO Max if you would like or not like, you know. But it's been some years since I've seen this one. I've been recently rewatching the animated series, which is great. So curious to see how the live action Spawn plays out years later. Have you ever seen it?
My first watch. My first watch.
Really?
I only knew Spawn from the comics. Because I, you know, you used to have like those Witchblade and Spawn comics in the comic book section at the grocery stores. They used to have those. Or you could get like, you know, the little game strategy guides and stuff like that from that section too. And that's how I came to New Spawn. You know, I read the comics, but I've never seen the film because I was, you know, it was rated R. I was too young to see it. And then I just never saw it.
Right. You know? Well, here's what you do. Try, if you have time, try the first season of the anime series, only 6 episodes, and they're only like 22 minutes. So try to watch the first season as well as the movie. And that way you can do a little compare and realize what the live action movie could have been, because the animated series is pretty solid. The second season of the animated series, it's weird. The animated series, is the first season's great and the third season's great. The second season's not as good. I don't know why. The quality of animation is still there. The story is just kind of a little all over the place in the second season. But that may give you a little idea of what Spawn could have been if they had done the live action version, like the animated version. And McFarlane is continually talking up doing another live action version. So maybe he'll get around to it eventually. You know, it was a couple years ago. It was rumored that Jamie Foxx was going to play Spawn. So we'll see if McFarlane gets around to doing that. One of my all-time favorite comic book artists and one of my all-time favorite 90s comic books. I really enjoyed Spawn when it was out, and I used to keep up with it. I don't keep up with it anymore, but at the time I did. So kind of looking forward to talking Spawn. It'll be fun. It's your first time you've seen
it. Yeah, man.
It'll
be cool. I look forward to that.
Yep. And we'll be back next week with a in-person recording, I believe, as we talk Spawn and bring you folks pop culture for the month of April, or this month in pop culture history for the month of April next week, and whatever other goodies we bring. And we welcome Ask Clown of the Week nominations.
Yes. Let us know.
I think that's going to become a real thing.
Yeah. Let us know if you have a nomination for Clown of the Week.
That's right. Just don't nominate me or Matt.
Yeah. No, celebrities. That would not be funny. We want celebrities.
Cause you know, like, yeah, that would be something Frank would do. Like, I'd nominate you guys.
Yeah.
No, Frank, you cannot do that. But, yeah. But, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, as always. And, on all these apps that you can find podcasts at, and our social medias are all there on the website. So follow us, join the dark side of the force. And
tune in.
Until next time, continue as always to be safe. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And until next time, remember as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.